Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
Remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcast. Thanks again for joining us for today's TechNet webcast 2008 Defense in Depth Security Series, Part 2 of 8, All Bark and No Bite. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's presenter, Kai Axford. Kai, you now have the floor.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, so here's the deal. Part 2 of 8, we're working our way through this painfully, slowly, but we are getting there. Okay, so yesterday was really just the overview of what it is we're going to be talking about in this series, right? So those of you guys who did not have the chance to attend the series, the webcast yesterday, please go back and review. There will be homework. All right, so today we really kind of get into this. But before we get started, for those of you who were not with us yesterday, I just wanted to take a brief moment to introduce myself. My name is Kai Axford, and I'm a senior security strategist at Microsoft, and my job is basically to travel around this big world of ours and talk to people about security. I talk to IT professionals, I talk to executives, I talk to a lot of different people about security, speak at conferences, all that kind of stuff, and really take that feedback that I get from the audience and stuff like that and take it back to our product teams so that they can fix what it is you don't like about our products. So here's the key thing. You don't tell me what's broke, I can't get it fixed, right? So that is my email address. You see it right there. That is actually it. It is not some kind of fake email address that I have an admin that answers my message form. This is me, right? This is the mail that I have everywhere I go. It's on my phone, everything else. So as I said yesterday, if you're driving home sitting on a 405 or something like that and you're saying, man, traffic is horrible, but I wish I'm just thinking about that webcast, that excellent webcast I heard from Kai Axford today at Microsoft. You know what, I wish I'd emailed him and asked him a question. You know what, if a question pops up later on the day or later on the series or, you know, 6 months from now and you have a question about something, you know, shoot me an email. That's absolutely fine. I expect that so I can pay the big bucks. And finally, I have my blog site as well. I post a lot of notes and things like that from these presentations up there. You know, as you know, you can download the slides, but we're forced to strip out a lot of the notes off the slides. And there's a lot of things I probably can't put out there as much as I'd like to, so the blog is a kind of an easy place, a dumping ground for all the things I pontificate on throughout my course of my day as a security professional. Okay, so having said that, we talk about this series. Let's go ahead and take a look at this series because I'd like to know how many of you guys are planning to actually, you know, sit through the whole thing. How many of you guys are going to be here with all eight with me? Because there's a total of eight. We're doing a defense in depth thing, so we're going to hit a series of the stages in defense in depth. Each webcast will be dedicated to a different portion of defense in depth. There are seven different stages, and add an intro to that, so that gives us a total of eight. That's good. And so I would highly encourage you, if you have not registered already, go ahead and do that, because that way we know how much pastry and coffee we need to get. Okay, you guys didn't catch that joke. All right. So let's move along. Let's talk about this defense in depth a little bit because I want to show you where we're at. So this is the model really for the webcast series as well as the really truly defense in depth. Why do we have defense in depth? What's the purpose of that? Well, the purpose of that is you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, right? The reason we have multiple stages, it's like a castle, right? A castle has a main wall, it has interior walls and things like that. So if one wall gets breached, you have some backup plans and some things you can do. It's no different when we talk about computer security. We have multiple levels and layers of security. And what this also prevents is you putting all your eggs in one basket. If you go out there, yesterday we talked a lot about budgeting and return on security investment, but if you can't just say, I'm going to spend $100,000 on my antivirus solution and I'm going to spend no money on my firewall, I'm going to spend no money on patch management, things like that. You can't do that. You got to spread it out, right? And that's what we're trying to prove here. So what we're going to do today is today's session is actually going to be on policies, procedures, and awareness, okay? Now, when I talk about policies, I'm not talking about group policy objects, All right. I know a lot of IT guys get wrapped around that GPO thing and how cool it is, and there's like 15,000 of them now, and you can, you know, I can lock down everything. I can have that box dance around and do whatever I need to do. That's not what we're talking about. This is the more important policy. It's the all-encompassing policies, procedures, and awareness. Let me tell you the advantage of this section. You will get no better return on your security investment than you will when it comes to policies, procedures, and awareness. It is by far the most bang for your buck that you get when it comes to security, right? Things like a security awareness programs, you know, it's very cheap to implement, and it has more impact than does the greatest, most impressive flashing light firewall that you could ever purchase from any security vendor. Okay? So again, that's why it's real important we understand this, have a good idea of what it is when we're talking about this stuff. So we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about why do security policies utterly fail? We know that. Eventually that's what happens, right? You know, Kai, I got it. Security policies are important. I should have these written down. We should have them filed. You're right. But they never work. Dude, you're telling me I've spent all this time writing these up. My managers write all this stuff up, but they fail constantly. Why? We talk about that. Why do we even got to bother? They don't work. Who cares? All right? So then finally, we're going to spend some time, a fair amount of time, talking about how to build good security policies. And I'm not talking about just building a security policy. I'm talking about building a good security policy. Because there is a difference than just writing a policy just so you can say, when they ask you at a conference, how many people have security policies, and you raise your hand and say, well, we have a security policy, because if I'm at the conference, I'm gonna yell at you, you know what, how many times have you enforced it? And, of course, the answer is usually, well, we never actually enforce the policy. We just have it in a book somewhere. And you know what? That's worthless. It's absolutely worthless. Why would you spend time creating something that you can't enforce? Right? Absolutely true. So, again, we're going to talk about this and how we're going to make sure that we can actually enforce the things that we are spending all this good mind share writing. So what are the four common pitfalls? Well, here's the deal. Policies have natural weaknesses, right? Security is a barrier to progress. If you do not understand this, welcome to the world of security, because you've apparently only recently joined us. Security is a barrier to progress. It is. It just is. You can't. Security will lessen performance because, you know, we have to spend so many cycles on making it do it secure as well as doing it fast, right? So it is a barrier to progress because, you know, it just is. Security is a learned behavior, right? We didn't wake up one day and say, you know what? I think I better look both ways before crossing the street. Somebody had to tell you that. You had to watch it on Sesame Street or wherever you had to watch it and learn that. It's dangerous. Be secure. Why is it that, you know, I lock my car when I, you know, go to the mall? Because it's a learned behavior. It only takes a couple of times hearing about it on the news. They got their car broken into. Talking to one of your buddies as a police officer telling you there's been a lot of car break-ins around the area. You will be aware, right? You have to expect the unexpected. I always say this about security. I've heard this quote before. I can't remember who said it, so I apologize if I somebody on this is actually listening who actually said this, but you never say never in the world of security, because just when you say never, some 17-year-old kid in Finland is currently writing the next exploit that will actually do what it is you say can never happen. So we are very careful never to say never, okay, or always. And there's no perfect mousetrap. No matter what you do, there will always be risk. We talked about that yesterday. You can mitigate risk, you can lower risk, you can lessen risk, you can transfer risk, but there will always be risk. You can't get around it, right? There's risk in everything you do, okay? You're listening right now to the webcast on your computer, more likely. So you're saying, this is great, but there's a risk there. How do you not know that, you know, somebody's doing something, you know, on the server in the back end, but you don't. But there's a risk you take. Well, I've got a lot of controls to prevent that. Great. He took a risk to get to the grocery store. You know, I drove there, I could have had an accident, like I talked about yesterday. I could have got a flat tire, a lot of things could have happened. You're right, but you weigh those risks out, and then you determine whether or not to accept it. This is something I impress upon executives and managers I talk to all of the time. Your job as a chief security officer is not to say yes or no. Your job is really to provide the recommendation towards the CEO. Because ultimately, the CEO has the ultimate saying power. You know, he's the one that makes the decision. Right? And if your CEO says, if somebody says, if we turn off all the security on our network for one day, we can make over $1 million in profit. Or let's say a billion, make it more realistic, right? $1 billion you can make. But you say, well, you can't do that because you can't turn off the security. That would be bad, blah, blah, blah. Is that your decision to make? No. The risk to determine whether to accept the risk or not is not yours. It is the CEO's and ultimately the shareholders. So your boss, the CEO, might say, you know what? Do it. I'll take the risk. Now, here's the deal. If that blows up in his face, who's on the hook for that? The CEO, well, no, it's not the CEO. It's actually the CSO that'd be on the hook for it. You know he'd end up getting fired for it. But you get my point, right? The truth of the matter is you can only make recommendations based on your experience, and that's really important to understand. Okay, so again, there's no perfect mousetrap. We have to realize that. There will always be holes. There will always be things that go along with that. All right, let's move along here. I love this slide. You guys ever come to the intersection and see something like this? Right? Gotta love it. Actually, it's just a piece of art out in Europe somewhere. But again, it kind of drives home a point. Right? Security is a barrier to progress. We've talked about that. Protective measures are, by definition, obstacles or impediments to commerce, and generally at zero benefit. Wow, did you sell more widgets because you added an antivirus solution? No. Okay? Zero benefit. And we talked about yesterday that security as a whole can actually help things like in retail. If you have a loss prevention and that gets, if you do that better, then you actually cut down on the amount of stuff walking out of your network or out of your business, so your profits will actually go up. You're right. In that regard, it is. They're usually designed to mitigate specific threats. They always reduce the ability to freely share information, right, because it starts prohibiting things. And there is always the big balance between security and, as I call it, security and usability. You can't have both. I've had people come to me and say, Kai, how do I make my computer completely secure? Usually it's an end user or something like that, or my mom. And I say, here's the deal. Pull it off the network, unplug it, pull it off the network, encase it in cement, and put a guy with a gun in front of it. Wow, how do I use that? You can't use it, but it's secure. And really, it's not even that secure because somebody with a bigger gun can come take that box, that big block of cement, right? This is when you put a platoon of Army Rangers in front of your server, some guy's going to show up with a division of Army Rangers to take it away from you, right? So there's always that one-upsmanship, and that's true in anything, okay? So we've got to understand that balance between usability and security. I'll give you a perfect example of this in a real-world scenario, how this happened at Microsoft and with you, okay, for these guys listening. Windows 2000. Well, let's put it this way. Windows NT4. You guys remember, go back in the Mr. Peabody in the Wayback Machine and go think about NT4. All right? That did not have the web server automatically installed. You had to go add it, IIS4, right? You added IIS4, and you said, man, this is a real hassle. I got to set the stupid web server up, and I got to get that. Where's that CD at? It's on, the bits are on there. I got to load it up. You go load it up, and it gets installed, and you're like, okay. So we took feedback. What would you like to see us change on the Windows 2000 server? And you said, I'll tell you what I'd like to see change. I want that stinking web server installed by default. The world is moving to the internet, guys. Microsoft, you guys need to wake up. Make it easier for us. Make that web server automatically installed. Okay. So what do? Windows 2000 server, what? Web server automatically installed. Then what happens? Uh-oh, security is now important. Before, usability was number one. Now, all of a sudden, time started to change, right? September 11th happened, and now everybody's really concerned about security, and guess what? Now it's, why does Microsoft install the web server by default? That's stupid. Okay, great. So what do we do in Windows Server 2003? We take it out, and you have to go back and manually install the web server, and by default, it only supports static web pages, and you know what we're hearing now? How come it's so hard to set up the web server? Right? If there's no answer, it's a constant juggling act. So we got to be aware of that. Human nature begets desire, right? We talked about traffic lights earlier. They exist for safety. But have you been to a traffic light? I grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin. There's literally one traffic light. And you come down in the middle of the night, and it's flashing, and there's nobody there. They roll up the sidewalks at 6 p.m. And you're like, do I really wait for this thing? Are you kidding me? But you got to, right? But at one point, your patience starts to run out. That's what human nature is. They get tired of it. Okay? Well, I've got a stupid antivirus, and it's definitely making my machine run slower, but it's not protecting me from all the viruses. What good is that again? And finally, again, network users talk about have the same experience and the same limits. They don't see any benefits, right? What is the upside of this? Why am I running this antivirus on my machine, right? I always tell people, how do you sell security when you've never had a security breach? Think about it like this. Why do I have car insurance if I've never had an accident? Because you might, right? You might, and you're always planning for the worst. That's the thing is about security professionals. That's a very hard part of our jobs. It's the whole, you're planning for something that might not ever happen. And if you do your job right, no one will ever know. Okay, so remember that. So we got a lovely picture. What would happen if I was out there walking around the plains of Africa and I saw this walking around? Well, you know what? As I tell people, you know, I'm with my buddy, I always tell him, you know what? I don't got to outrun the lion. I just got to outrun you, right? So we come back to this. Self-preservation is instinctual. Security isn't. Right? We talk about there's a higher level function requiring that initial learning and occasional reinforcement. Very, very true. You don't just wake up one day as a security guy. You don't, right? You might wake up one day as a security paranoia guy, or as we call it now, secure-annoia, where you're worried about everything. I am definitely one of the secure-annoia people. I shred everything. Matter of fact, I've already gone through four of those little waste paper basket shredders you can buy. Right, went through four of them, toasted them. Right, for Christmas last year, not last year, 2 years ago, my wife got me one of those big office shredders. I can shred a phone book in that thing. Right, and then people. I had one guy come up to me after the show and said, "Yeah, Kai, but does it do cross cut?" I'm like, "Dude, are you really gonna ask me that? I mean, it does everything short of putting it in a burn bag. So yes, it does do cross cutting. We've got to teach and preach the policy, right? But tailor the message for the audience. Right, sitting there explaining the finer points of MITRE reports and how you know the common vulnerabilities system and all that good stuff to an end user. Again, don't care. Right? Explain to me the business value. Hey, you know what? I've been talking a lot today about the importance of updating your antivirus and how that actually happens on the back end with Windows Update Management, Windows Update Server, and all that good stuff. I know you really don't care about it. So here's the deal. If you don't update it, you're going to lose all your data, lose every single marketing report you've ever done, and you'll basically be out of a job. Now, is everybody listening? Oh, yeah. Now you're getting it. Okay? Information security procedures are often unintuitive, right? How do we recognize the value of assets? How do we evaluate risk? How do we estimate the cost of compromise, right? If you can't explain it in a business manner, if you can't tie it back to business, the net result is going to be this is a stupid policy. It's stupid. Why are we doing this, right? I'm the king of criticism, right? So I'm always, you know, somebody's got to really show me value in something, right? Most IT guys typically are a little pessimistic side, I've found. But again, you know, you have to be able to show the value of that as regards to assets, right? We're so worried about protecting data. I'm protecting the server. You're not protecting the server. You're protecting an asset. Start thinking of it as an asset, right? To me, a server is just a bunch of, you know, fans in a really cold room, right? And management as well, right? Management wants to hear that. We talked about that yesterday. You want commitment and funding, you better justify it, right? And we talked about yesterday about some ways that you can do that with some tools that you can actually use to do that. This is my favorite slide. I should have this up in my house, right? Failure, when your best just isn't good enough. Again, what does that mean? Expect the unexpected. There will be failures. Processes designed for global core enterprises will process transactions at all hours for many users. Anybody not understand that? Your network never sleeps. It's always on. It's always running. It's always doing something. Okay? Most of you guys nowadays, how many people turn off their home computers at night? I don't. Right? I know the best practice would probably be to turn it off and unplug the wire and pull the Cat5 cable. I don't do that. Just keep it up and running. All the time. Again, as complexity of procedures increases, so does the chance that they will fail. Anybody who does not understand this only needs to go get some little tech gadget. And the more fancy it is and the more stuff it does, the more chances it's going to break or some of those features are going to break on you. Okay? Expect failures and disasters. And more importantly, how are you going to be able to tell when something breaks? Right? If you don't update, if you don't do back, I'm going to harp on this all the time. I'll harp on this a little bit later next week. But guys I talk to all the time, how many guys have a backup plan? Oh, yeah, man, we got a backup plan. We're using this. We do intermediates. Okay, great. Okay, I got it. When's the last time you verified your backup? Oh, we do that every time. We always check that box and says, verify backups. That's not verifying the backup, right? Verifying a backup is taking the tape to a blank box and reinstalling the OS and copying all your data up and make sure you have an exact image, an exact copy of that original data. That's verifying. So, but here's the deal. How do you know that it failed? Give you a real-world example. This really happened. I was in support. That's what I did before I did this job. And support engineer for Microsoft Platforms, working on the server team, and somebody called up, and so I was working in Exchange, and they said, we lost our server. It's crapped out on us, and we got to get it all set back up. I said, no problem. I do, you know, message recovery all the time. I can recover an Exchange server pretty much in my sleep. So I said, go get your tapes. He's like, okay. And so he went and got his tapes, and the next thing I heard is the words that no support engineer ever wants to hear on the phone. Uh-oh. I was like, "What? That's not good. That's not a good sign. That's not an affirmative, positive, reinforcing sign when you say that." I said, "What is the problem?" I said, "Do you not have backups?" "No, we have them." "Okay, well, then what's the problem?" "The problem is, apparently, it stopped making a good backup 6 months ago." "So you never change tape. You just keep stuck in there?" "Yeah." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Kai, be honest with me, man. Shoot me straight. Am I hosed here?" I said, "No. I mean, we're going to be able to get the mail back, you know, with the exception of the mail for the last 6 months." He's like, "Well, no, we really, really need to get that back." It's like, "Well, you know what? That's unfortunate. You know, I recommended that he might, you know," he said, "No, Kai, I'm serious." He goes, I could lose my job." I said, "Well, my boss is going to be here, you know, after lunch." I said, "Well, then what you might want to do up until this point would be to spend some time on monster.com because there's no way for you to get that data back. Keep your skills current." Right? We all know that. Prepare, plan, practice. Again, we're trying to weed stuff out. So this is a pretty good example of a mousetrap, but still not a perfect mousetrap because we know there's no such thing as a perfect mousetrap, right? But this is a pretty effective one. You're never finished. As we know, security is ongoing, and Microsoft marketing materials will tell you that security is a journey. There's not an endpoint. Okay, great. Security is ongoing. Technology changes. All right, we're going to talk about some of this stuff tomorrow. About Thursday, we start talking about the perimeter, right? Perimeter security, because you guys used to pitch the concept of the DMZ. I'm going to contest that theory is basically invalid, right? DMZs are gone, okay? Technology is changing. Systems that come outdated fail, lose effectiveness, right? And threats always exist. As we know that, they're always there. They never go away. They're always there. So in regard, we've got to keep that up to date. So what's the real threat? Well, got news for you. I talk about this a lot. We are so focused as IT professionals to want to throw a technical solution to every problem that comes down the pipe, right? My wife's grandmother is 92 years old, okay? And they said, you know what, it'd be really nice if she had a way to communicate with us at the home and, you know, and things like that. I wonder what we could do. I said, I know what we'll do. We'll get her a freaking laptop, man. There's a freaking Dell XPS box. It's smoking fast. She'll love it, man. World of Warcraft totally screams on it. She'll love it. Okay, you know what? Grandma doesn't know how to use a computer. What? But this computer will have everything. It'll be state of the art. Okay, you're an IT guy. You're missing the boat here. Okay? Step off the technology platform for a second and take a look. Again, we get so worried about the network. We are looking outside. We are waiting for the attacker. We're waiting for that 17-year-old in Finland to hack our network. I have 14 firewalls on my external side, and you know, and I have those in DMZ, and I have a front edge and a back edge. But we're watching them. Boy, we got IDS and IPS, and we are on it. We got the bells and whistles. We got the knock. It's up and running 24/7. We are on it, Kai. Ain't nobody gonna break in. Okay, great. Meanwhile, you got Bob in accounting with a USB drive plugged in, sucking all your data off your entire electronic database, and he's putting it in his pocket and walking out your front door. I ask guys all the time, I say, let me tell you the two biggest ports you have open in your network. It's the front glass, it's the glass doors right by your reception desk. So again, don't get wrapped around what the media tells you. Oh, there's a big, you know, this happened a few years ago with a large 24-hour media conglomerate announced that there's been a huge worm on the internet, and all servers are shutting down, and desktops are shutting down. Well, the fact of the matter was is that their servers and their desktops were shutting down because their network administrator failed to patch. It wasn't worldwide. It was their network, right? Complete protection might be a budget waster. Here's the deal. You can't protect everything. You got a limited amount of money. Pick what you're going to protect and protect the most important stuff. And we talk about overt policy violations come from borderline hackers tempted by unsecured assets, right? It's the, I love that. We got hacked. Okay. This is a true story. Another one. I was out at a show in Texas and I was doing a presentation in, I think, 2002. And right during my presentation, all these cell phones started cutting off. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Well, it turns out these guys were running SQL and they got hit by a SQL slammer. And I said, what is the deal? I said, didn't you guys get the patch? The patch came out 180 days ago. Oh no, but we were still testing it. How many SQL servers do you got? Just two? It took you 6 months to test a single patch? Come on. We were hacked. Okay, that's not, again, a big concern, right? So we ask ourselves, what hurts retail? Petty theft or vault cracking? It's the death by a thousand cuts, right? It's a little piece of the leakage, a little piece at a time. It's not the one big home run, right? If I can get $1,000 a dollar at a time, and it might take, 6 months, or I can get it all one big shot, that'd be great, but if I'm going to draw more attention to myself, why would I do that, right? So think about it like that. So we're going to talk about three little scenarios here about policy breakdown and why they happen. We're going to use these three scenarios. I'm going to kind of move through these pretty quick. So the first one I'm going to talk about is this. You guys know what that is? It's a doormat, right? And what do people put under doormats? They put keys under doormats. So let me give you a little analogy. Electronics company is doing some research and development. They have some very secure data they need to work with. And their security management team is on the ball. And they say, here's the deal. We're going to give you one key to the research lab, and we're going to give that to the manager of the lab, who doesn't actually sit in the lab. He sits outside the lab. And he said, okay, great. And they say, everybody said, well, wait a second. We got like 20 people that need to go get in and out of that door every day. I don't care. I'm a security manager. Do what I say, not what I do. Listen to me. I'm in charge. Here's your one key. And it got to be a real drag because everybody had to go to the manager and get the key, and he had to walk him over and open the door for him and go back to his office. By the time he did that, somebody else would need the door open. So he made a request, like all good managers do. He asked the security department, excuse me, oh, mighty security people, could you please give me another key because it's a real hassle to do it this way. And the security department came back in their infinite wisdom and said, absolutely not. You are increasing risk by doing that, having more than one key. So what did he do? He said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this key in a public location that only the 20 people that I work with are going to know where it is. And then miraculously, one day, all the electronic stuff was stolen out of the office, out of the lab, right? And you're like, well, yeah, because what? They shared the key. But who's his fault? Well, again, the policy's authors fail to consider the impact on the workflow. Do you even ask the user, hey, what do you guys think would be a good way to implement this? Okay? And again, security department was unable to note the policy was even thwarted. Did they even check up to see what it looked like? To see how many people were accessing this? How long did it take? They could have maybe changed the policy. Outcome? Expensive equipment's lost. Employees and managers and security morale was negatively affected. A thief is still out there with all your gear. Right? Again, your measure that you implemented provided no value whatsoever. And since the policy caused a loss, it caused a loss because it was what? Inconvenient and easily circumvented. Right? Again, unenforceable. Well, this one, the blank check theory. Okay? What's he talking about here? What does that have to do with security? Okay, so we find out through an audit of the network, we find out we got all these email accounts that we're setting up but are not being used. Or they're used for one day and then they're not used again. There's just an overabundance of these unused accounts. So some genius up in management says, from now on, for an email account to be created, it needs a signature of three vice presidents. Great. Again, sounds like a good plan. But then the poor IT admin goes in there and create a new user account. What happens? He has to get three freaking signatures. Well, how often is that going to happen? Okay, so he runs around, tries to get signatures, and either one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to be, you can never get the three VPs to sign it because they're always so freaking busy and gone. Or number two is, and the VPs get upset because, dude, I'm a VP and you're interrupting me to sign this stupid paper, this document that approves it. So what happens? The some guy thwarts the policy. Some VP says, you know what would be a good idea? I'm just going to sign a blank check. I'm just going to go ahead and sign, get a piece of paper with all three signatures on it and use it as a standard loan. We're just going to sign a bunch of them in advance. Okay? Amazingly, what happens? All of a sudden, the network gets hacked. And they go look at the user account, and the name of the user account is John Q. Public. And they go, wait a second, who issued that? Who signed that thing for John Q. Public? Oh, look, these three guys did. It's from a, they all signed these letters in advance, right? They signed a blank check. So whose fault is that? Again, failed to evaluate the viability or effectiveness in the business cycle. Signatures are arbitrary, and they don't identify users. Who gives a crap what the signature says? Right? You guys all seen that? I love when people come up to me and say, you know, can I get your signature? You ever go to get something from UPS or FedEx and they say you got to sign for it? And you scribble whatever you're going to scribble on there? Right? What do they do? They don't say anything. They don't know if it's your signature. They don't know who you are. You could have broke into that house. Right? They don't care. So, again, signatures don't identify users. The risk of granting access not communicated to the device presidents. Okay? Security department should have known that blank sign forms were circulating. Absolutely right. You should know every single thing of you should know everything about everything when you're a security pro, right? No. But you should have some idea. You should have been heard about it. Okay? And you double check. You do spot checks. What is it? The only thing that ever gets done is the things you check. Right? So again, what was the result of that? Hackers out there. We got a loss of reputation from public disclosure once everybody found out about it, and we lost proprietary information. Great. All right, here's my last one. So here's a lovely little, I'm sure this never happened to anybody here. Here's a scenario. You have a web farm, and it's doing great. And you're like, man, wait, this web farm is getting smoked. I mean, the performance is down because we're just getting so many hits, and our widget 2000 is really, really popular. And so people are really hammering this thing, and we just got to grow the web farm. We need to get some more boxes in here. We got to get some faster procs. Get this thing going. You do all that. Right? You go out there, you put in a request, denied. No, boss, you don't understand. I know it's a budgeting cycle, but we really need this. We're overloaded, the servers. Customers are going to start to complain because they're sitting there watching Internet Explorer just spin around waiting to bring down our web page. And it's just really good for the business if we got a better website. I gotcha. Denied. So what happens? The business units say, well, screw that, man. I'm going to go create my own site. And what do? They go and start their own business. They go start their own web server. And then the next thing you know, it's on the Internet, and it's outside of the venue of and the control of the actual IT department. It's not being backed up because guess what? People in marketing don't back their stuff up. They don't. They just don't do it. I know because my wife is in marketing, and she doesn't back her stuff. Well, actually, she has her software automatically backs up for her, so that's not actually true. But you guys know what I'm saying, right? And so the web server sits out there, and then they turn on the Internet. Next thing you know, they're getting customer records, and they got customer high priority information, right? And they got a bunch of it's really sensitive data out there. And then, well, where are they keeping the server at? Well, they don't want you to see it because you're in the IT department. You're going to freaking shut them down. So they keep it in the closet with the toilet paper and all the cleaning supplies. But they got so much crap piled on top of the web server because who knew that a computer actually needs to get air? It burns up, and they have no backup. And they go to you and say, our web server burned down. And you say, what web server? One that we were storing all this customer data on, and now the customers are furious because we lost all their information, and then we might get sued. Great. Whose fault is that? Yours, right, because you're the IT department. Okay? But again, we're by the backlog, right? Management didn't understand the importance of servers. The manager of the marketing team did not realize how important that was. Computer room staff didn't know about the unprotected assets, right? Now, we talk about this a little bit in a couple other webcasts, about the importance of having a good relationship with all those business unit managers, right? Explain to them that, man, look, I'm not here to shut you down. You know, I'm here to help you guys and protect your assets and the company's assets. And again, you talked about its placement certainly sends the wrong message, right? Values about that of toilet paper and be treated as such. Okay, so the outcome, as we can see, customers demand refunds, proprietary information is compromised, blah, yada, 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 bad things happen. Okay. So why do we even need these stupid things? Why do we have policies then? Talk about this a little bit. A government agency. You know what? I'm not going to cover all these. We're going to run out of time if I spend too much time on these. I'll just hit a couple of them. Government agency, good example. These are all real stories. government agency had a guy that basically was downloading porn to his machine. Okay? And they came back and they said, well, you know, here's the deal. You know, there's no policy specifying what excessive personal use is, so they couldn't really discipline him, right? So then they found again, now he got porn on his machine. Well, now we could get rid of him. So management terminates him. So what does he do? The clerk went and actually appealed his termination with the Civil Service Board, claiming that he couldn't be fired because he'd never been told that he couldn't download porn. You'd think that would be obvious, but apparently he wasn't aware of that. So after a civil service hearing, the board ordered him to be reinstated with back pay. Why? They had no policy that said he couldn't do it. Okay, don't assume that everybody is thinking the same way you are. Well, yeah, but you just can't do that. Don't assume that. Okay? Oh, here's a great one. The law firm. The manager of data processing took a job with a competing law firm. Because his former employer had nobody who could do the job that he did, they kept him on as a contractor. On a part-time basis, he would perform system management. In order to do these tasks, he needed full admin privileges on the former employer's network. Anybody see a bad thing going on here? One day, the former employer learned that the manager's new employer was opposing them in a high-visibility lawsuit. Could the former data processing manager gain access to the shared legal strategy files for the case? The answer, of course, is yes. But nobody knew whether the manager had exploited these capabilities because no access logs were being kept. Right? Situation could have been avoided if the former employer had policies about conflicts of interest, access privileges, and keeping logs. You get the idea. These are all, I could tell you hundreds of stories about all these different issues and why you'd probably need them. All right. So we're going to talk about why we need policies. All right, we already got that. You get this. I love these. If I just open a bunch of ports in my firewall, my app will work. That's probably true. Ooh, I love this one on the right. This one over here, right? I think a wedge in the computer room. I want the door open so I can get in and out easier. Okay, you know, because your company probably just spent all that money, you know, creating badges for building access control. You know what? Just so you can wedge the door open because it's just an inconvenience. So I can use my first name as a password. Okay, great. And then how about this one? They blocked my website, so I brought my own modem. Or I should scratch. Let me go ahead and scratch that out because that's not really too accurate anymore because people really don't use. Let me see what I got this wrong here. Scratch out this. And you know what we're going to put in here instead? We're going to put in a wireless access point. Right? So they bring their wireless access points that they buy at Best Buy. They plug it into the net tap on the wall, and guess what? Voila, you have a wireless network. Boys, I didn't authorize that. It doesn't matter what you are. I'd see that wireless access point sitting on his desk. You're absolutely right. That's why he would hide it behind his desk or in a drawer. Right? So, again, that's why I need policies. And then you say, well, yeah, but what else? What's going on? Well, right there. Over here. So you get these guys calling up. Hey, we run a network, too. How do you set up your firewalls? Well, I would never tell them that. I would never tell somebody. I'm an IT professional, guy. I am absolutely flabbergasted. You would think that I would tell somebody what our network configuration set up like. Really? Let me give you a little scenario. I'm at a conference, a big IT conference. And in that conference, there are vendors. And in that, one of the vendors is out there, and he is showing off his cool, sexy new firewall. And being the good IT geeks that we are, we go hang out with the vendors and we go look at all the cool, sexy toys. And we go over there and we see the cool little, the flashing, you know, the firewall Gigantor, you know, 2008. You're like, this is the greatest firewall ever. We've been running it for a while. It's great. We love it. And of course, you sit around there, and believe me, I've seen this happen because I go to conferences for my job. I see the one or two IT guys that don't actually work for the company hanging out the booth all day long. Because they're subject matter experts. I've been running this. My wife calls it the masculine sniff. Right? You do the old head toss, the sniff, and some young lady will come up to you and say, I'm sorry, I work for a small company, and we're interested in maybe implementing the Gigantor. And you throw the head toss / masculine sniff. Yeah, we've been running the Gigantor since early beta. Oh, really? Well, I guess you know a lot about the Gigantor. Actually, I do know quite a bit about it. I've been using it for a long time. And then what happens? Well, you know, we try to set up our network like this. You know, we open these ports and we use this configuration. Well, you're doing it all wrong is what you're doing. See, what you got to do is you got to run like we run our network configuration like this. Right? Anybody have that experience before? Happens all the time. She just socially engineered her way into your network. Like, it's so happy. Women make the best social engineers. Okay? And don't tell me it doesn't happen, because I know it does. I see this all the time. Why do we need the door locked, right? I never can think of a good password. I mean, what's the number of that line, right? So we get all this, you guys, you know, what's the SSID, that wireless access point? I like to use it too, man, or I'll tell on you. Okay, so how to build good security policies. Number one, don't encourage bad behavior. What we got here? Let me see what that is. It's like a guard barrier thing there, right? You gotta get the wall, the little thing that goes up and down. It's pretty slick, huh? What we don't want to do is encourage bad behavior. People set these things up, right? Everybody see it right there? It's got the little, but what do we have actually? We have this. Why in the world would you set that policy up in the middle like that? People just didn't go around it. What good is that thing doing you? It's not. Right? Somebody thought that was a good idea. You know? But it's not. We're encouraging bad behavior and saying, you know, let's do a hassle, let's go around. So how do we win? Right? Remember, there's no perfect mousetrap. Plan for the natural weaknesses. Okay? Educate users on the policy enforcement and value of assets. Real, real important, this whole thing right here. The value of assets, right? If I tell you, you need to run an antivirus, and you say, why? And I say, because you have to. And I say, but why? And you say, because it's important that you run it. Because you don't understand a virus is bad, and it can do bad things, and it's really bad. Okay? I understand it's bad, but, I mean, what does that mean? Well, bad means I might have to come in on weekends, reset your, okay, that's bad. It's bad for you, but, I mean, how's it bad for the company? Well, because, again, you know what? Say, you know what? Here's why. Because if you lose your freaking data, we're going to probably lose about close to $100,000 this quarter based on the data you have on your laptop right now. Oh, I got it. Now, you're talking my language. You're talking the change, right? I got that. So, again, perform the health checks. Make sure that these things are actually working and make corrections when needed. Keep going here. Good policy enables management to make a statement about what? The value of information to the business. Okay? Remember, permit actions that would otherwise backfire. Believe it or not, monitoring network traffic is actually legal in some countries, unless there exists a policy stating that monitoring is likely to occur. You guys have all seen that when you join the company. What happens? You sign a statement that says that you are willing to be monitored. I was doing a presentation. I'm not going to say where, but for a government organization, a government intelligence organization, and not the U.S., but a foreign country, and they actually said, one guy stood up and said, I don't think they can actually monitor my information without my approval. I said, really? You work for an intelligence agency in this country, and they're not allowed to look at your machine unless you tell them you can. That's my understanding. I believe your understanding is probably incorrect. I pretty much guarantee you that if you work for the CIA or the FBI, they can go ahead and look at your machine without you getting permission, right? So, again, be aware of that. And inform workers of their information protection duties. It's not just your responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility. So we talk about a good policy. It defines how employees are permitted to what? Represent the organization and what they may disclose, use organizational resources for personal purposes, clearly defines protective measures, enumerates acceptable and unacceptable behavior. Right, all these things should be part of your policy. What are we going to have? Well, look at this. We talk about account setup and maintenance, password changes, help desk procedures, access privileges. Man, God, that's a bunch. Holy crap, that's a lot of stuff I got to create from scratch. I'll talk about that in a second, because there are actually some templates out there you can actually use. You just do the replace all with your company name, you're kind of set. So, again, the policy drives all other decisions, right? We talk about just how things kind of occur. I'm going to zip through these bullets real quick. But again, we have these procedures. We go through process, technology, implementation, all the way down to refining the policy. So when we do this, let's talk about security. We talk about policies and impact, right? Security is inconvenient. We know that. All right, we got it. Recognize and respect security's disruption. It will create stress. It creates more time. But be aware of it. I talk to app dev all the time. Developers always want to say, yeah, but I got to put security in the product now. It's going to take longer. So increase your timeline. Right, I can't do that. Well, then find a guy who can do that and have him do it. All right? Avoid excessive complexity. Don't make it one big 800-page policy on acceptable use. This is our one big policy. It covers everything in one thing. No, don't do that. Right? to prosecute or not? This is also important. How are you going to enforce it? Well, I don't know. Decide in advance how far you're going to go and then get your management to back you up. If you decide against prosecution in favor of reprimand, it's less important to start worrying about evidence and things like that if you discover somebody's got hacked. However, if you do decide to prosecute, guess what? Know what evidence you need to get. Right? Make the punishment fit the crime. You can reprimand employees for sending personal email on the company network, but you might want to think about prosecuting somebody who hacks the payroll server. Okay? So again, have it written up. Right? Just makes sense. You want the enforcement to be visible. Make it overt. Have badges, even in small firms. Right? You guys have all seen it. Badges are important. And be honest, it's very important that you have them out there, even in small places. I don't care what you have, but have some kind of a badge. Heck, you can make them up yourself, you know, whatever you can. You know, it's not that hard. Now, at Microsoft, we have the sexy badge. We have the badge, and it's got a smart card built in. It's got tied to our building access controls, right, which is great. And this is funny. I'll tell you a little funny little story. So my wife used to work at Microsoft. She was a marketing manager here, which is how we met, which is a whole other story. But so one day, my wife was at Microsoft working in the office. I was in the office, too, doing whatever IT guys do. She was actually working. I was, you know, investigating stuff. And she said, honey, she goes, I left my badge at home. Can I use your badge so I can get back in once I get into the bathroom? I was like, oh, that's fine, sweetie. Go ahead. So she walked out, and, you know, she's gone a little while. And she came back. And then, of course, my security mind starts working, thinking what? What's Microsoft operations team going to say when they say, why is Kai Axford in the women's bathroom? Right? Because she had my badge. But then nothing happened. So I'm thinking, well, I guess I can go in there anytime because nobody's saying anything. Right? Nobody even questioned it. Right? But if you talk about making badges are important. Remind constantly. Regular briefings, log-on notices, reminders, posters, you know, flyers, newsletters, quizzes, contests, brown bag sessions. I don't give a crap what you do, but do something. Right, I actually had a lady come up to me at a presentation. She said, Kai, can I talk to you a minute about security awareness? I said, sure, because it's the biggest bang for your buck. And she says, well, you know, we have a small company, about medium-sized company, about 500 employees. And she goes, I do security quizzes every quarter. We have a newsletter every month. We have an internal website. We have an external website. We also do spot checks and a couple other things I'm doing right now. But what else can I do? I'm like, I mean, you're doing more than most people I know. Right? That's good. But keep doing that. Emergency service, you got to coordinate with your physical security people. And for those of you guys not aware, tomorrow we're actually going to have the director of the Microsoft physical security team is going to be on the webcast with us. So gear up your questions about how many cameras does Microsoft have? Do you guys monitor everything that goes on there? Do you guys have motion detectors inside the buildings? He'll be able to answer all your questions, right? How would I design my own physical security network? He'll tell you. Okay? So again, but be in touch with these guys. When you talk about things like life services, all that's important, you know, fire control and all that good stuff. And drill the troops. Right? Know where the bad guys are. You know, perform the drills and test procedures. Ah, yes, we've all seen this. If you have not seen this, again, welcome to the world of security. You see this all the time. Because why? Well, we'll talk about a whole password thing. But again, what would you do if you saw that? What do you do? Right? You empower the enforcers. You got to get executive support. But again, you empower the people that are enforcing them. You know what a lot of companies are doing? They see that? They take the machine and leave a note on the desk. Easier to do with laptop. Leave a note on the desk. Your machine was secure. Your machine has been secured by the IT security department. Please come and see us when we are not on lunch, our lunch lasts between 11 and 3. So come see us after that, and you get your machine back. All right? Guarantee you, he probably won't make that mistake again. Same with unlocked desktops. All right? Take unlocked desktops. Put a note on there. Someone got a big red flag on their machine. You guys all see those things like when you abandon a car, right? They put those big orange stickers on the side of the window, and you can never get that crap off your window ever again. Right, slap one of those on their monitor. Okay, training. We talked about that. And get some budget. I know a good friend of mine works at Texas Instruments. He's actually an IT director there. And he did a presentation at our local ISSA meeting on what they did to generate security awareness. And it was absolutely phenomenal. And he did it for like minimum money. It was really, really inexpensive what he did. I was just absolutely amazed. Great, great guy. And again, know your environment. Right? Easier to detect things that are abnormal. But how do you detect the abnormal? You got to know what normal is. Right? That's important. And again, investigate everything. If Microsoft didn't come knock at my door and say, why is it that you were in the women's bathroom? Then I'm going to think that they're not really checking. Right? Walk in your user shoes. Be visible. Use the same stuff they're using. You know, how many of you guys were, you know, the user says, you know what sucks about Windows XP is that I can't, they got the machine locked down and I click on the calendar in the right hand corner, the time, and I can't even see the calendar. Right? It doesn't pop up, doesn't give me a calendar, I can see the time, and it keeps telling me I got to be an administrator to do that. And you say, well, it doesn't do it for me. I can click on it and see anything I want. Because you're running as local admin. And they're not. Oh, yeah, crap. I didn't see why that was such a big deal in the first place. I don't see that Vista UAC is such a big deal. I mean, I'm running as admin all the time. Exactly, because you run as admin all the time. Right? They don't. So the ability to add a printer is hugely important to them. Right? So, again, little things like that. Run the same stuff they're running. And if you've been an administrator, again, more than a day, understand that you have this concept like I have. You guys ever go like your wife's computer, your spouse's computer, kid's computer, and go, man, your Outlook looks weird. Why do you got the preview pane on the bottom? Who does that? Now, you need to fix that. You basically go set their entire Outlook up exactly how yours is, right? That's called IT administrator, right? That's how you're supposed to do it. Right? That's everybody's supposed to look like your desktop. That's the way it works. That's why you're in management. Okay. Again, awareness, know what has value. What do you do if somebody loses all access? Friends aren't always friends. We talk about social engineering a little bit later, but again, be aware, you know, don't give your passwords or personal, you know, we all know this thing. There's things. Uniforms are cheap. What does that mean? Uniforms are cheap, right? That means that anybody can go and buy a FedEx uniform. How did Kevin Mitnick do a lot of his stuff? He got some of those backdoor programs. His rootkits, basically, I don't know rootkits, but some of the stuff he had, the malware that he had, he put on a floppy. And what did he do? He knew that they updated their servers every single month via floppy. FedEx would bring a floppy to the network center, and then they would drop it off. The guy would sign for it, and take the floppy and insert it and do all the updates. So what did Kevin Mitnick do? He went and got a suit. He went and got a FedEx uniform. That's real hard to find. Now on eBay and everything else, and then he just got dressed up in it, and he walked down there and had him sign for this floppy disk that he put in a FedEx envelope, and they inserted it right in the server for him. He didn't have to do anything. Okay? Mutually authenticate. What does that mean? When the bank calls me and says, Mr. Axford, we believe that your account has been, you know, something's wrong with your account, you need to give us your password. Okay, great, I'll call you back at the number I have for you. Right? All right. So here's a great website. You guys haven't seen this before. It's called nativeintelligence.com. Now, Steve Riley is my coworker and peer. He actually knows these guys, and these guys do their entire business is about security awareness. That's all they do. They create posters and all kinds of stuff. And this is one of the posters they have, right? This is a January 2008 poster. Right? It talks about the importance of snooping. And you can print these out. How to be careful with attachments. And December 2007 poster. You can scroll down there, and they have tons of posters, tons of right posters, and signs, and bulletins, and stickers, and, you know, buttons, and all kinds of little mess you can print out. And it's really good. They have some really funny stuff out there. But I think their work is absolutely phenomenal, so I kind of promote them. Okay. No, I don't get any kickbacks either. Let's talk to them about that. All right. So, again, what are we going to do? We keep people aware. Remember that. Ongoing reminders. Keep people aware. You can't just do one and then just never talk about it again. Okay, you can't do the yearly. Microsoft would do the annual security awareness training, and you do it, and then, you know, 3 weeks later you forget about it. Police departments do a good job. Police departments are always reminding them. Remember the whole, let's be careful out there, right? So you guys are watching Hill Street Blues. I'm kind of dating myself, but they remind their officers that, hey, let's not forget, Officer so-and-so was shot and killed 2 weeks to the day or 3 months ago on a routine call, right? Because it refreshes in the minds of the police officers, you know what I'm doing is dangerous. Okay, it's not just, today I didn't really do a whole lot. Be creative. Don't become yet another source of noise to be ignored, right? Don't put stuff up on the freaking bulletin board. It's the biggest waste of time in the world, right? Have it somewhere that people are going to see it. Make it exciting, right? Give away a Ferrari. I guarantee you get a lot of buy-in there for the old security awareness program then. And then you got to have it available. You can't just say, well, we have a security policy, and we keep it in a three-ring binder in the manager's office. Well, how many other copies do you have? No, just that one. They put it somewhere. Make it available. So if people have a question, they can simply find it. All right? Okay. And again, a couple other things. Expect failure. Right? You are going to find things that are broken. Okay? Continue auditing. How do you find things that are broken? Because you audit it. And you get feedback. Right? Number two, break into your own house. Try to thwart the policies. You know what? Go out there and walk in the ladies' bathroom with your badge on and see if anybody comes and asks you about it. Right? Try to walk in. Social engineering. There are plenty of people that will do this. There are Tiger Teams and Pen Testers and all these companies that will actually use social engineering to try to get into your network. Right? Or actually into your building. And it's a great, fun job. Right? I know Ira Winkler, who runs a company that does that. Ira Winkler used to work for the NSA, and he has a company now that basically does that. And he says people always come up to him volunteering to, hey, I'll work for you for free. Just let me go ahead and try to walk into people's networks, walk into people's offices. And no, you know, it requires a little bit of training. But a big thing about social engineering is just have the cojones to walk in there and say, you know what? I'm supposed to be here. I'm the VP of marketing for this company that you never heard of. Of course you better help me out. And I need access immediately. Also, I won't sign that huge agreement with your company. It's important. I'm important. I'm in the suit. I'm a businessman. I have no time for this foolishness, all right? Also a hacker, I'm trying to get your name. Learn from your mistakes. Again, we're going to make changes as we go. Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. I'm not going to have time to cover my last thing. I want to go ahead and throw it open to questions. So you guys start typing away, and we'll get to these questions here. All right, let's see here. I got a question here from Chris. It says, is there any reason to keep virus software running with tables that haven't been updated for years? I say this all the time. I tell them to update it or uninstall it and get a new version when they get a faster computer. Is that bad? No. Running for people like you, Chris, security people would not have a job. Seriously, here's the deal. Running an antivirus program with non-updated signatures is the equivalent of not running antivirus software. Good point. My father-in-law actually did this. He bought a copy of a server. He bought some software. He installed it. He got a virus. This is back in the blaster days. And I said, do you have antivirus? And he says, yes, I do. And when's the last time you updated it? He goes, you have to update it. That's not, again, doesn't give me that warm fuzzy as a security pro. And again, here I'm saying, and I make jokes at the expense of the marketing people. Here's the deal. They don't get it, right? You're a security guy. You're an IT guy. Of course you get it, right? But just like I don't understand the concept of reverse entries in accounting, they don't understand the concept of updating their antivirus, okay, or changing their passwords, right? Okay. Ed has a question. Ed, thank you so much for your work yesterday. That was great information. Ed, are there more benefits or risks to having applications that automatically enter passwords if the data is secured and encrypted? It depends, and I hate to use that because it's the answer that you can answer any IT question. But again, I'd say more benefits are, I'm just hesitant to answer that question, Ed, just simply because you never know. I can't do it and answer in a vacuum, basically. I would change my perception a little bit if it was encrypted passwords and it was on a box I knew that only a few people had access to and they couldn't pull down the local table and all that stuff, then I would have just done whatever they wanted to. I'm going to put the resources up here. There's the links. Somebody's asking about the links. I'm going to come back to the questions here, but I want to get these out before we run out of time. NativeIntelligence.com, and then also SANS has some templates that you can basically download and just swap out their generic company name. You might need kind of already built. So who else we got for questions? You guys look at that, or you can provide the link to your policy templates. Yep, there it is right there. Owen, Dean, there you go. All right, so again, I'm going to go ahead, and before I close out, I want to just go ahead, guys, I'll come back. I'll leave it up on the slide here. Please, you can download the slides. Feel free to do that. If you haven't signed up, it's a lovely photo of me. I look like a big out of shape. But that's the link if you want to download and sign up for all the series. I would highly encourage you to do that just so we have enough, a good count of how many people we get. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over. I'm to our moderator, and she can take us out. And, guys, please take a few minutes and fill out that survey. Again, if we don't know we suck, we can't fix it, right? So, again, if you like the series, if you like the session so far, please let us know that. But, again, I always want to know kind of what it is we need to improve on. So please take a few seconds and fill it out, and you might even win something. I don't know. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Kai. I would like to remind everyone to go ahead and, if you do want to, you know, copy the slides, to print a PDF of it by right-clicking on the slide area and selecting Print to PDF. You can either print or save the slides locally for your convenience. Let me go ahead and bring up that survey that Kai was talking about. Just one moment. Okay, so you should all be seeing a survey in your slide area. If you could please take a moment to fill it out before you log on. We do appreciate your feedback. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. Also, watch out in your inbox tomorrow for an email with information about viewing this webcast on demand. The email will also include a link to the downloadable PowerPoint of today's webcast. So I'd just like to extend a special thanks to Kai for today's presentation, and thank you all for joining us today. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.
Hello, thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.